Hello everyone, and welcome to the first ever Globers podcast. I'm here joined by both Sagar and Anya, and we are talking about the Globers project in general. I would like to introduce myself. I'm Gonçalo, I'm 22 years old, I'm Portuguese, and right now I'm a volunteer in Italy. Sagar?
Hey there, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. I am Sagar. I am from Nepal, 25-year-old, volunteering in Trento, that is northern Italy. The plan is to be here for a year. I've already been here for 2 and 3 months almost. And I'm working with Anya, who is the coordinator of the project that I'm here for, the Globers project. And so Anya, hi there.
Hi there. You have already presented me, so... I'm Anya. I work at the INCO Association. As Sagar said, it's based in Trento, up north of Italy, and we are the coordinating organization for the Globers project.
And so we should talk a little bit about the Globers project, since our audience doesn't really know what it is. So Anya, could you explain a bit how the Globers project was created and what it really is?
Yeah, sure. It's my favorite part of my job, is explaining what is Globers project to people. Globers is a project financed by European Commission, the Erasmus Plus program that we all love a lot because it gives us a lot of amazing opportunities to work with young people all over the world. And Globers is K-Action 2 project of Erasmus Plus program that is called Capacity Building in the Field of Youth. And it's one of the most amazing opportunities given by the European Commission, to my opinion, because it's the action that is this type of projects that allows us to build capacity not only of the organizations that are based in European Union, but also organizations outside of EU. So those we have partners from Asia, from South America, and this is what Globers is. Is a great cross-continental partnership. We have 10 organizations from 8 countries, 4 European Union partners, us in Italy. Here we have 2 organizations basically from Italy, one INCO, Associazione INCO, that is managing it, and then La Strada, where Gonçalo, you are volunteering. Yeah. And then we also have partners from Belgium, Portugal and Slovakia, and in terms of the cross-continental partnership, we have Nepal, Vietnam, Brazil and Colombia. So it's a very rich and vast partnership, and we are really happy to run the project. Then, I don't know if you need more details or you would like to ask more questions first.
I would like to ask how originally it was created, because I think it's a very interesting topic. To know how was it created, how to get such a project running, and how do you apply to the Erasmus Plus?
So then Globers idea is a baby of INCO organization. For this, maybe I have to tell a little bit of the background of INCO as association itself, because we run a lot of international mobility, learning mobility projects, and a lot of volunteering mobility. So one of our aims for many, many years, for over the 15 years, is to help young people to undertake amazing experiences abroad. And usually we might work with, like mobilities within EU or even in-country volunteering. But in case of Globers, as I mentioned, as it's one of these amazing, amazing actions that gives us the opportunity to engage partners from different continents. And the idea behind was to give opportunity to 9 young people from across the globe to volunteer in different countries and promote the global citizenship through different tools. So at the beginning, INCO had the... Well, it's like something that anyway fits our mission. So, because we do organize this kind of projects for years, And then in terms of Globers itself, we had the idea of, let's make something, some cool volunteering here and there. And then the idea of Glober citizenship came out. And we thought that, volunteering is cool itself. But if you talk about global citizenship and global citizenship education, something that would be a really great added value of the project might be if the volunteers coming to another country in another continent would also promote and kind of teach the global citizenship education to locals. And this is how the whole idea was shaped, that we would have volunteers who would be moving from, like Sagar, for example, from Nepal to Italy. And then meanwhile, we would be creating the workshops on the global citizenship education that includes a variety of really cool topics such as migration, such as multicultural societies and sustainable development goals and others. And the volunteers being in another country, they would be promoting these workshops, organizing these workshops with the local young people. So what we thought about the big idea behind of it is that this is the true global citizenship, right? When you have a person from completely different cultural background that is coming in another country, and then you have this kind of space for discovering what global citizenship is. So this is how the idea of Globers was how the idea happened itself. And then we applied for the capacity building in the field of youth. Is it enough or I have to tell something else?
I think it's enough. As in
No, but I get really confused all the time. I have to describe all the application process because I think like from one hand is something like really I can understand why people are curious. From the other point, like from my perspective, it doesn't sound that fun and entertaining as it is, because you work for months on project application and you create all these budget lines and it's quite...
No, you don't think it's interesting because you are in it and for you it's work, you know?
Yeah.
I think we should also tell that Anya is a coordinator who was also there to create the workshop, like create the idea behind global citizenship and think about how things will run and which country goes where and what would be the best outcome of this whole thing. And also what workshop should be done and how can this workshop, you know, lead to something beautiful, who meets when, you know. So all of this was Anya's or the INCO's team's, in a way, baby, like the dream. While Gonzalo and I, we are the babies of the babies. So we are the babies of Globers project, exactly. Right? So which means that we are now here trying to realize that project into reality. So, you know, making that, okay, there was a dream that was had when the project was written. And we are here to make that dream a possible, you know, outcome. And
exactly.
Yeah, so
I think Sagar, what you have just said is just amazing too, and we should leave it in podcast instead of asking me things again, because you just perfectly explained
absolutely
the baby thing, the absolutely. Kindergarten.
We are all babies of Globers. The babies of babies. No, and so in that logic, Gonzalo, me and I think a lot of other volunteers, so we are doing a lot of things around the project, with the project, and also, like, example, to develop the project to be bigger than what it was initially, you know, thought out.
Yeah.
So there is this logic, you know, how we can do the things within the project. For example, running workshops, coming to the different countries and, you know, knowing the culture. But at the same time, we can do much more than this. We can also try to put our own creativity at play. So, for example, this podcast itself is a part of this. We're trying to amplify what we've learning and what we are trying to do with the project itself. And Gonzalo, what else is happening in the project with the volunteers?
Well, right now a lot of people have already traveled from their home countries to the countries where they will be volunteering. Actually, I'd like to ask Anya about that. How was it working with different time zones, and due to the situation right now in terms of healthcare and everything like that? How was it working with
This is the way you try to avoid saying COVID.
The C word.
The C word.
Exactly.
Well, it gave me a lot of gray hair, but we managed to start to kick off 5 volunteering mobility out of 9, and this is something we are very proud of.
Woo! It's awesome. It's awesome that it happened.
Yeah, it is awesome.
Mini claps.
It is awesome. And yeah, I'm personally very happy for that, because as Sagar was saying about Globers as a baby of mine, now I have 5 additional babies in different countries. I'm very happy about that. So we initially the project, when we were writing the project, obviously it was far away from everything that happened and this COVID, and of course nobody could even think that it's going to be that challenging. And we were actually also very lucky, because a part of the volunteering, the project foresees a couple of meetings of the coordinators, and we managed to have the coordinators meeting here in Trento in February last year, right before COVID arrived to Italy. So I think we were very lucky, and that meeting meant a lot for the project, because we could discuss in person all the whole amazing idea about the global citizenship education baby, you know. And then in 2020, despite of everything, we managed to start 5 mobilities. We have Gonzalo from Portugal, who is now in Italy, in Bolzano. It's the only non-cross-continental mobility, but don't ask me why, it just happened like this, that we had one mobility within the European Union. Then we have Sagar from Nepal, who is volunteering at INCO. We have Hien from Vietnam, who arrived recently in Portugal. And we have Camila from Brazil, who arrived to Slovakia. And Leo from Colombia, who managed to arrive to Belgium. And then he was the first one who managed to do that back in the end of September, when the situation with COVID was still very confusing. So apparently everything that happened was there was a little bit of magic in it, of course, but also a lot of will and desire to make things happen. So I see, like, to me, there is a lot of course, the contribution and the true commitment of the volunteers who didn't give up and who still wanted to undertake the mobility despite of all this COVID-related mess in the world. And yeah, and of course of the Globers team, because we've been really working hard on making it happen. And in terms of COVID, when it all started, of course we were very confused, especially here in Italy. I can say that there was also a lot of not like personal drama in this, but Italy was the first country in Europe that was hit a lot by COVID, and we were sent home very, very suddenly. And then everything with the project management was put on pause, and it was really difficult for me personally to, you know, like to try, like, you kind of, as a coordinator, you have to be motivated yourself and to motivate the other partners to participate, to still look for the volunteers while the situation is really creepy around the globe. So it was challenging. It was challenging, but at the same time, I think also thanks to the fact that we managed to meet in person and create this kind of connection in between the coordinators from different countries. I think to me the team is really amazing. It was very supportive, and we were having these monthly Globers meetings that were a little bit sad, because we were trying to give each other the updates of the countries, and the updates weren't positive, of course. And of course they weren't much optimistic back in time. And yeah, and to me, like, I also remember that one morning I realized that I actually check, of course, like, you wake up and with all these COVID things, the first thing most of us would do in spring last year was checking the situation, right? And I realized that, okay, I do check the situation in Italy. I do check the situation in my home country, because I'm not from Italy myself. And then, I was checking all the situation, like what is happening right now in Colombia, in Brazil, in Nepal, in Vietnam. So I had like all these big, matrix in my mind. Because otherwise, I mean, it becomes, at some point, it becomes part of your life because you have to be aware in order to try planning at least. And yeah, this is what it was. And yeah, now it's, COVID is still there, but I think the situation has changed because, well, we are kind of used to this. At some point, it became a new normal. So,
I think after the volunteers come in to their respective organizations and respective countries, the organizations, in a way, already work with the volunteers in different ways. So we are already engaging ourselves, whichever possibility can. So now it's not only you checking what's happening around. Colombia and Brazil, it's also the volunteers checking what we can do to make sure that this project is, you know, beautifully done and that also we gain something out of it and we create what we want to create by the end of it. So which means that I think, yeah, the five volunteers that are at the moment working, and also we have two people who were supposed to already move on to the next one. So we've got Mike also trying to go to Vietnam, and we have seen him already engaging heavily and trying to work with the official volunteers, let's say, in air quotes, with the five volunteers. So it's exciting, and I think like we are getting closer and closer to making project work in whichever situation we are in. So I don't think so. The global volunteers or the global citizens are waiting for things to be normal. I don't think so. That isn't even a phrase now. We are just doing. We are doing whatever best that can be done right now, and making this a new normal. So, you know, for example, we are not able to have workshops physical, but we are able to talk about what we want to do, how we are doing through other media, such as the audio media that we're talking right now. We are also trying to create videos, and so through whichever methods we think is correct at this sense of life. I think we are doing it, and I feel like we are learning much more than we had known when we started. So we always were looking at it in terms of, oh, nothing might happen. But now that we are in the situation, a lot of things are happening. And we have our website running. We have our Facebook page running well. We have our Instagram page running. We will have this podcast running well. We would have, the videos running in our website as well as Facebook. So we've got so many things planned, and, you know, the ideas, a lot of things happening.
I agree. I just wanted to add that to me. Well, I also see another side of COVID, because at some point it was this moment of having this blast of creativity and trying to find alternative ways of making things happen. And for me, like, to me, this podcast is one of it. No, it's something that we haven't planned on the project application phase. We didn't write in the project that we are going to create the podcast, but now we are. And I find it like really, really fascinating. Yeah. The way we try to cope with the situation and make this new normal, like a part of just having a new normal, but having also a very creative and, you know, like win-win thing for all of us.
Absolutely.
So that our audience has a bit of context. For example, both me and Sagar are 30 minutes away, maybe 45 minutes away by train in the same country, and we cannot see each other at the moment, for example. And it's been this way since I arrived in November.
Yeah, we've been planning our coffees for so long. We've been planning for our
pizzas exactly.
for so long.
Yes.
Yeah.
But at the moment it's impossible. But hopefully during summer, maybe, or end of spring.
And here, like, also, if I may add, again, if I talk as a coordinator about the Globers babies, to me it's something that I admire the most in the whole process of managing Globers and of the project progress was the fact that there were the volunteers who decided to do that, who said like, okay, I'm still doing that, and all of you guys arrived in lockdowns. Like when Gonzalo arrived, Bolzano was the red zone, and when Sagar arrived, he had to do 14 days of quarantine in a castle. and we still like, even, I mean, I don't even see all of my colleagues in the office because of COVID, we have the shifts. So it's something like, the situation is very peculiar right now, and still to meet people who had the courage to change their lives and to move for 1 year of international experience in all these circumstances, in all this weird, you know, like news, that things are changing every day. To me, it's something that, yeah, I do admire a lot.
As in this, I want to add something. I feel like at this day and time, us spending so much, investing so much energy in the projects such as global citizenship means that this global citizenship and the idea about solidarity within the globe has something bigger than other things. So for example, that we want to invest time in it. It is the new way of looking, not as an individual nationality or individual community, but it's as a globe. So I feel like there is this new movement of people and of youth, let's say, if we can call ourselves youths, to think that, yeah, global citizenship is the new way of looking at life, and it's the way to solve bigger problems. And I think Gonzalo could agree with me here that one of the reasons why he chose to come from Portugal to Bolzano, which is a red zone, was also because of the fascination and the excitement of the project itself.
Yes, and also I think everyone should have an international experience, because it really opens your mind to new things. And if you are only just going to stay in your home country and you are going to go outside for vacations or for visiting, etc., it's a very small sample of what is really a culture from a place. And you can actually experience other people and their culture and everything around it. So for me, an international experience is very important, especially at a young age, while you are still figuring out what you are, what are your principles, etc. I think everyone should do it, in my opinion.
Even if there is COVID around.
Even when there is COVID. If somebody's yes. listening to this thing and they want exactly. to volunteer, and if we are publishing it soon, we still have people who need to travel outside. So if you're interested, if you are from Colombia.
Okay, I can make this advert ads in between of the podcast. If you are Italian and you want to go to Nepal for 5 months of volunteering, please contact Anya. And also, if you would like to, if you are Italian, you have Italian residence or Italian passport, and you would like to have experience of 12 months in Colombia, in Bogota, please let us.
Perfetto, Anya. Well done. Well
Advertisement
done.
Advertisement is
using
over.
Using the
well, bravo. Well done. Well done.
Anya, as in, did you see, were you imagining, the fascination of global citizenship to be this, like, you know, this strong, or was it already in your thought, or was it something new?
Well, yes and no, because obviously the topic was always very, very exciting for me, and I truly believe in the fact, like, in all the global citizenship education. I think it's very important, and I think this is something that, well, a part of being perhaps a challenging thing, but it's something really that the world really needs right now, especially with all the COVID related crises and everything. And yeah, but at the same time, there is always this like gap in between when you have a project idea, when you write the project, you prepare a project. So you have these things in your mind and you put them on paper. And then of course you're happy that it's approved and you start thinking on how to implement things according to what you written. And here maybe I'm answering Gonzalo to your question, Gonzalo, about how the project is being is being written and everything. So there is and then like when it's approved, of course you have this the super happy moment that it's going to happen. But then you also have to read again what you've been writing there, just to refresh your mind, because then things are changing, you know. And then usually it takes quite some time in between the project application and the news from the European Commission that it's been approved. Like it's about 6 months in between these two actions. And yeah, and then, so this is one thing, and it gives a lot of joy and happiness. And yeah, I was already happy with the fact that we could implement a project on such an exciting topic as global citizenship education. But then when you arrive to the implementation, and it's the whole new world, because then you have partners, you have personalities behind the screen, right? Like people who do coordinate it, who do implement it together, who brainstorm together, who arrive to completely new dimensions. And often it happens that, okay, it's been written like this, we had this blah 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 put on paper that we have to implement this and this, and then it works in a different way. To my opinion, this is the beautiful thing. This is the most beautiful thing out of European project management, and it actually becomes much cooler, much more fascinating, rather than you imagine it on back in times when you've been writing it. And to me, this is what was happening and is been happening with Globers. It indeed exceeds my expectations. And also, again, if you talk about all the COVID crisis and all the gray hair that we had, it was all worth it, because now looking at the volunteers who do the experiences and all the things we are doing together, the workshops that we have finished and we are ready to kick off this new phase of it. Or like the other week, I was having a call with Hien, who is volunteering in Portugal. And it was just, you know, like such a nice video call. It wasn't like the work related thing that you have to, I don't know, like have this kind of narrative of having a coordinator who tries to check how the things are going and a volunteer who is supposed to report. It wasn't like this. It was just, you know, a conversation of two global citizens, like about things, about how the things are going, how is it to leave the lockdown in Portugal, because she also arrived straight to the lockdown and like all these kind of things. So yeah, I don't know if I answered your question.
I think you answered and more, as in, by the way, just so you know, all the names that we hear, Camila, Ian, Mike, Leo, all of the names that you're hearing, they will appear in our future podcasts. So if you are interested in what Ian talked to Anya about and how her time in Portugal is and what Leo is doing in Red Cross in Belgium and how his life has been and all of this, of course, please keep following up on that. I want to ask something in this logic, how in terms of work, like, you know, we said that there was the plan and something in the paper and everything. So there are workshops, I know for sure. There are workshops that we are doing and everything. What are we doing in terms of, like, what is there in the paper? What are the things that we have to get done, and what are you excited about that will happen in the future, Anya?
Yeah, okay. I would maybe start, and then I would take advantage of the fact that Sagar is volunteering at INCO and helps me with this part of the project, and I will leave the floor to you. But yeah, initially the idea was that so we have the partnership, the coordinators from 8 countries, 10 organizations from 8 countries, and we are all youth workers, so we are all organizations that work with young people. And the idea initially was that we would create 5 workshops on global citizenship education that would be focused on using non-formal learning methods. So something like in one word, I would just say like something not boring.
Something not boring. Right, yes, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. But I mean, like games, working in groups, using some digital tools, maybe brainstormings and so on, role plays and stuff like this. So initially the idea was that we think on how to embrace the topic of global citizenship education in 5 workshops. So we thought we divided the whole concept of global citizenship into 5 pillars, and then we were brainstorming on what it's going to be. So at the end, we thought that the first workshop should be the introduction to the global citizenship education itself, and why it is important to be a global citizen, what are the global citizenship values and all these things. And then the other four workshops are dedicated to migration, to multiculturalism, to sustainable development goals, and to our planet. So everything that is about climate change and environmental related topics. So this was something that the partnership arrived at that famous meeting last year that happened right before COVID. And so the idea was that we create the concept and then we offer to the volunteers to make it happen. Of course, with some flexibility, of course, perhaps with some space for their own ideas. Flexibility now is an important also concept because of COVID. We are not sure that we are going to have the workshops in presence, the offline or old school workshops. So that was the idea that we had. As the other project steps, we thought, again, before COVID, we thought that the volunteers, all nine volunteers, would be implementing the workshops in the host countries. Then we were going to collect the information from the workshops, so to like their own opinion on how it worked, the feedbacks, and also the feedbacks from people who attended the workshop, so to see whether it worked or not and to which extent it worked. And after, we were going to meet again and to create a handbook out of it, out of all the information. So that was the plan. And now maybe Sagar would like to talk a little bit more about the workshops themselves, because he's been okay. The right hand, the true, yes, right hand and the, yes, protagonist of the draft. Yeah.
So as in at the moment, the partnership that we had when we were discussing that in February, the meeting then, I was there too. So in a way, I'm a confused soul in this whole thing, or maybe less confused, I would say, because I was also there in the meeting. It was a coordinator's meeting. So I was as a coordinator coming over there. And because I'm also a youth worker, I got a chance to volunteer for the project. So I know a little bit more about how the insides of the project and what's happening and all that. So at the moment, I'm creating and compiling all the information the 10 partners around had gathered together into these 5 workshops. And each workshop is exciting to the next one. So for example, in the first global citizenship education, like informing or introducing it, we've got like model United Nations as one of the ways to realize how can we discuss global citizenship education. So using model United Nations. Now, if somebody doesn't know about it, again, we will of course share details in due time about how these workshops work and all that. So using that, then we've got multiculturalism, and that is an interesting one because here we will use card games like something called Banga, where it's an exciting concept where you realize that people coming from different countries and different cultures do not play the same game, you know, that somebody has innate problems entering into a city or a country because they don't know about the city and the country. So some people are going to, you know, learn something faster than some people won't. And we are trying to realize this with the card game. And of course, the details of it is a juicy one that I will not spoil it here, is also a part of workshops. Then we've got multiculturalism going on. We've got migration. And in this one, I'm really excited about this one, something called My Exile, where people are, you know, the participants will be going through a simulation as if they are exiling from their country, like moving away from the country into a better country where they want to be, you know, integrated well. And the trouble and the problems that they're facing, and we are trying to simulate that into figuring out, okay, what pain and what troubles are people facing around the world, so that we can build this sense of solidarity within the people, you know. So the young people would know that, oh, if somebody is coming to Italy from, let's say, a worse off country where they feel that they are looking for better lives, what problems do they face and how can we try to solve that and how can we empathize with that. And then comes One Planet, or Our Planet, where we discuss something called Cause Canvas, using a cause canvas created by my own colleague Inge Pach, where we will try to look at the cause of problems, like in a really holistic manner, and find solutions for that. And hopefully the young people themselves are able to create some content and some pages in Facebook or somewhere to make solutions for that. So we want to make the solutions as visible as the problems are. And then we end all of this with sustainable development goals, where we will play games and dance and do physical activities to look at sustainable development goals and how we can use this for global citizenship. And now I know there's a lot of information here, and if you can't hear it, I'm super excited about this whole project. And I don't know if this is the first time Gonzalo is hearing about the workshops. Is this, Gonzalo, for the first time you're hearing about the workshops? How do you feel?
Yes. I know a bit about the first two you talked about. The rest of them I really didn't know. It's always hard to know, like, you clearly seem excited, clearly. I think I will take a bit more time for you to explain to me everything. And in due time, the podcast, audience will also know. Yes.
Leaving crumbs, you know, breadcrumbs when Jack and Jill or something, they were walking and then, you know, it's like,
exactly.
Okay, please follow us. I hope that this, like, it's nothing it is something that is to be reckoned with, something that we really are proud of. And I think, there is a lot to learn for us and also for the audience who's listening to this one, in terms of like, how can we discuss global citizenship at this age where, as connected as we are also equally disconnected. And as much of information we have, we are at the same time looking at fake news and, you know, being troubling ourselves. We are also trying to get away from social media. As much as we are connecting, we're disconnecting. So there is so much at play. There is so much disconsonance at the same time connections. So we are trying to figure out at this age, you know, where this is happening, how can we discuss something as important as global citizenship? And of course, I think we should all thank our mother, Anya. The project mother.
Jesus, I didn't expect.
In terms of, you know, realizing this, and whichever form it came out, it came. And I'm really looking forward to this, especially the non-formal aspect of it. And that I find really exciting. And I don't know how much our audience is aware about non-formal education. Anya, would you like to give a few words about what non-formal education is?
Yeah, we can try. But I think that the most important concept is what I already mentioned, is that this is not boring education. So that would be to me the light of the concept. Yeah, and non-formal education, basically, these are the activities that are, first of all, outside of the school and university. So the concept is that it's the way of learning by doing and learning among the peers. So us as youth workers, what we usually do, we do not stand in front of the audience saying like, okay, global citizenship is this or it's this. We do try to recreate an environment, an enabling environment, when young people can discover it themselves and arrive themselves to what it is. And then it's like, the beauty of this, I guess, is because there is not like one right answer doesn't exist. It's not like in the school textbooks when you have a definition and you have to write an essay on this definition. So it might be different with different groups, right? You might organize these activities for one group and then the whole result would be one, and then in another group the whole result would be totally different, but it would be still valid in both of the cases. And so non-formal education is based on different methods that include games, working in pairs, working in groups, peer learning, dialogue-based learning, problem-based learning, and brainstormings, and variety of methods that are exciting and that where the young people themselves are the protagonists instead of the professor who tells them what it might be. I don't know, again, if it's something, if this was clear enough or
I would
or
say it's as an I think most important part there, I feel, as a youth worker myself and also in being absolutely fascinated by non-formal education, because I had no clue what it was 2 years ago. and now I'm spending my whole life trying to figure it out and try to, you know, make it exciting, is that the participants themselves are the main focus. It is, as in, I would say, in a formal, frontal sort of content would be that the teacher is the main person who is giving information. But at the, in non-formal, it would be everybody figuring out everything together. And at the end, the result might come out different than imagined, because of course you also have to have a hypothesis before going in saying what could it could be. But at the end, it comes out different and mostly beautiful, you know, where you are unaware. So there was also a thought we discussed, Anya and I, that at the end of it, we should also compile what do Belgians think about global citizenship, and what do Nepalese think about it, and what is the thought about Vietnam, and trying to figure out like this puzzle, you know, like how global citizenship, the idea is, how is it entering into different cultures differently. So there is a lot happening. And at the end of it, Anya, there is, you said, a handbook. Why? Why are we creating a handbook?
Well, the idea behind creating handbook was obviously to try to spread all the beauty of Globers around the world. So not to limit it only to our 10 partners and 8 countries, but to make it a universal tool, a kind of a tool for other youth workers who would like to test it and try to implement similar workshops in different parts of the world. And then what we thought that is the true and the coolest added value of the handbook is the fact that we indeed try to test the global citizenship in the best way we can, because we have 3 continents involved in the project. So we would have audience from 8 completely different countries from the cultural also perspective, and then trying to collect together it all together. What can be cooler than this in order to promote the global citizenship education also among the youth work sector. So the idea was to spread the word, to disseminate the idea, to make it also visible for the outside world, not only for those people and volunteers and future workshops participants who would take part in all this. So that was what the handbook was about.
And with this, we are going to take a little break. In the second part, we'll be talking more with Sakari and Anya and to know a bit more about their origins. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. Right now, in this part, we are going to talk a bit more about our experience in Italy and how has it been. So first, I would like to start with Anya, since she's the one that's been living here for the most part and for the longest. So Anya, how do you feel about living in Italy?
Well, I feel great. I love Italy. I'm happy to live here.
I feel great.
I feel great.
Yeah, but I mean, how can you feel not great living in Italy? I don't think it's possible. But no, I guess in my case, as it was a very, very conscious choice to move here, because I really love the culture, the country, and the language. I'm very happy with this choice.
How long have you been in Italy, Anya?
I moved to Trento 2.5 years ago.
Okay. Were you in Italy before that?
I spent many, many years ago, I spent some time in Bologna. So I had a bit of expectations, let's say, about Italy itself. And I thought I speak a little bit of language, and I don't know, I had a kind of image in my mind, and then arriving to Trento was a whole new reality. So it was very interesting experience. I think because of the expectations again that I had, so I thought it would be something similar to what I lived before. However, it wasn't.
How different is your home country culture, let's say?
I had to start with where I am from, probably. Yeah, I was born in Moldova. I was actually born in Soviet Union. I know it scares people sometimes, but this is what it is. And yeah, I was born in Moldova, but then I was also born in a Russian-speaking family, in a family of Russian, Ukrainian, Bulgarian migrants. So I'm not a very typical Moldovan, maybe to talk with. And it is different. I think Moldova is different from Italy, but then also the cultural background of being a cultural minority in a country is also different. So there are a lot of differences altogether over here. But I guess, the language, the Romanian language that most of the people of Moldova speak, it's quite similar to Italian. So that was something a little bit helpful because of the common Latin roots of the language. So even though Romanian isn't my mother tongue, but hearing it most of my life back home in Moldova really helped me to comprehend Italian, let's say. Maybe not the Trentino version that I'm still sometimes confused, but it was helpful. But in terms of everything else, I guess these are quite different cultures. And to me, it's also, I think it's also important to talk about Italy in this context, in this environment, because Italy is very different itself. So it's like comparing it with the whole Italian culture, to me, is not a very right thing, because to me, Italy is many countries inside of it. So it depends on where you are.
If we compare, for example, Bolzano, where I'm living, to Napoli, is completely different. Even the accent, although I still don't notice it, I work with a person from Napoli, and I do not notice the difference between the accents, but everyone tells me that's very noticeable. But it's a very different background, also because Bolzano or Sudtirol in general was part of Austria. The background and the culture here is completely different.
Yeah, it's something really interesting here is, again, as you mentioned in the first part of the podcast, that we are just 40 minutes away from each other, but even Trento and Bolzano are two different realities. And to me, it was really surprising, like, and always confusing, always when I come to Bolzano and I enter a bar for a coffee and they would say Guten Morgen instead of Buongiorno. And at the beginning, like at the first few times, I was like, what? I mean, it's just confusing because you're still in Italy, right? Like you are on the territory of Italy. You move just 40 minutes away from a city where everyone speaks Italian. And it's like very casual thing. Like people are not surprised. People, it's just part of their lives, right? And this is the mother tongue also often. And it's something that really fascinates me here.
Gonzalo, are you learning Italian or German? What are you learning at the moment?
Okay, so right now I'm learning Italian. A lot of people have told me to start learning German, but I don't want to risk it. I'm still not, my Italian is still not very accomplished, let's just say it that way.
And then so, it will be with Bolzano accent.
I still, exactly. So I don't think I'm still ready to give up on my studies of Italian and start German. Although I really like German the language, to be honest. But here, yes, I really like the German language. And here is very common to hear German on your everyday life. For example, my biggest cultural shock arriving here was in the train, hearing the train stations in German and Italian instead of Italian or English. And it was when I realized that my English doesn't work here, and I really need to start learning Italian or German. And I chose the easiest one for me, Italian.
For newcomers in Italy, like you, you're getting out of the train and you're so much confident with your English level, and then you're like, okay, oopsie, it's useless. I really have to invest in learning Italian straight away from
exactly.
Yeah.
Anya, you've been in Italy, you've been in Trento for 2.5 years. Is the Italian better?
Well, it's much better than it was 2.5 years ago, because as I mentioned, I don't know for which reason, but I had the impression that I spoke a bit of Italian. But apparently when I got out of the train here in Trento the first time, I realized that a part of the fact I don't really speak it, I neither understand what is happening around. So that was very confusing and very sad and very stressful as well, because I was already here. So I had to focus on trying to comprehend better the accent and things. That wasn't very easy. I guess I speak quite okay now. I wouldn't say that I'm very fluent or I speak Italian very well, unfortunately, but I'm still learning. But something interesting is when I meet my friends from the south of Italy, from Puglia, they would mock me for having Trentino accent when I speak Italian.
Are you proud of that?
No, but it's I don't know. It's something that I wouldn't ever realize while talking here to people, because I just speak things out of my mouth, right, with people, and I never thought that I'm at the same time this accent. Like I'm kind of getting also the accent along with vocabulary and other things. So for me, it was very surprising to hear that I speak Trentino accent. You know, like I don't hear it, but yeah, Yeah, I think again this is the thing about Italy, of being very, very diverse and having a part of different cultural things and different food here and there, but also accents and historical cultural backgrounds and everything else.
One thing I really enjoy from here is like the fact that people not only learn Italian and English, but also learn Italian, German and English. So they learn three different languages at the same time, and although it must be hard, and that's I think that's why I contribute to the fact that they lack a bit in English here, is also very good to learn more languages and with different tones in your voice, and it becomes easier to learn new languages.
Yeah,
that's why
I think this is something that I appreciate a lot about my home country, because most of the population is bilingual and people do, maybe not everyone speaks both Romanian and Russian, but people do understand both. And I think it gives you like really, really cool and solid background for learning different types of languages as well, because then you can learn Cyrillic alphabet easier and understand better the languages from Slavic groups like Polish and Slovak and others. And of course, Ukrainian and Belarusian that are closer to Russian. But at the same time, like for me, it was getting the easier comprehension of Italian language, because I had this background of hearing Romanian all the time. And yeah, I think it's a really great thing for like overall.
I suppose they say, right, if you want to be healthy in terms of physical body, you should exercise and run and, you know, do cardio. And if you want to make sure that you don't grow old in your head, you should learn new languages.
That learning different languages and having all these kind of little things in your brain, it really helps you to avoid diseases like Alzheimer and this type of dementia type of diseases. So, guys, we are going to be cool old people.
As in talking about language, I speak German. I learned German in Nepal. Somehow Gonzalo learned Bulgarian and with the Russian alphabets, right? Bulgarian?
It's Cyrillic.
It's similar.
Cyrillic. Technically, it's actually a Bulgarian alphabet, because it was two brothers that got the permission from the Pope to be able to write a new alphabet.
And why I was saying that is like, I am a Nepali who knows German. Gonzalo is Portuguese, who wanted to learn Bulgarian, and we've got Anya here, who speaks Russian as her mother tongue, and now learning Italian. It's almost like a circle.
and then currently, and this podcast is in English. So
yes,
isn't this global citizenship?
I think English is like I think English is the neutral language that everyone speaks, even if it's just a little bit. Yeah. They are able to speak and to get around.
So yesterday we were having pizza with my friends, and we had this guy. He was Italian, and I felt yeah, everybody speaks English. So I was like, okay, who is playing? And he's like, no. And I had to use my hands, everything I could, to say who is playing whom and who are you supporting. And I was like, yeah, that's if I want to learn Italian, that's the way to go. And as in Gonzalo, you said right, like, you know, we think that English is neutral. Everybody should know English, you know, in that logic, like, you know, you have this, I know English and it's an international language and the whole thing. But when not, then you come into this conundrum, like, how don't you know it? You know, like in Nepal, so far away from English, I would say, right? We are as far as we can get, you know, unless we turn around the world again. We're so far away from language English. But the thing is, in Nepal, the school education system is all turning into English language. It's almost like you get punished if you speak Nepali in a Nepali school. Everything should be in English. And the purpose of this is that if we want to be competitive in the world, now we are living in a global world and not in a country anymore. Mm-hmm. If we live in a world, we have to have certain level of English, which means that me having this level of English was primarily one, because my school would not allow me to speak Nepali, because then it would be punishable. By punishable, I mean that sometimes you had to do stay extra hours to do, I don't know, volunteering within school, or you have to, in some school, they would even charge you money. They would say, okay, we will give, I don't know, 5 cents or something that you put in a charge, and then at the end of the month, you would use that for something. So you literally pay a fine if you speak in the other language. And all of this is so that you are staying competitive in the world. So it's an interesting conversation about how language is implemented and how we are using it all at the same time. You know, how we reduce our mother tongues to just mothers, and we move on with other languages that are better, and, you know, that can help us with the competition of the world. Yeah.
For example, I think, at least from my point of view, both Spanish television and Italian television are everything is in Italian, and for in contrast, Portuguese television, the movies are in their original language, instead if it isn't for kids. If it's for adults, yeah, it's in English, uh-huh, or their mother tongue, yeah, Italian, French. So I think that that allows, I don't want to say Portuguese people, because there are a lot of countries like this, for example, German, if I'm not mistaken, Germany. But it helps your brain to think more in English, or to be able to capture easily the language. While in Spain or Italy, since everything is in Italian, when they go to school and they start learning English, it becomes harder for them.
In Nepal, we have no choice. One thing is also because we are just beside India. A lot of people ask me this question, saying, oh, do you speak Chinese, Mandarin, or Cantonese or something? And I was like, no. And I have this, of course not. But at the same time, it's an interesting, because I speak Hindi. And a lot of people in Nepal speak Hindi. Now, Hindi is one of the national languages of India. And for an outsider, somebody's looking at saying, okay, you are between China and India, so you must speak Chinese, right? As in, it's a logical thing. Or you know, and it's an interesting one, because China has more population than India. They have more, you know, like they've got more technology. They've got more thing, you know, like they have in terms of bigger name than, mm-hmm, India. So it makes sense. And I raise my brows as if, like, you know, how do you, of course not, you know. But then I think, yeah, logically, it makes sense. It's because also a lot of media in Nepal comes from India. So if any TV channels you, mm-hmm, watch, Bollywood is big in Nepal, which means that the music industry in Nepal is full of Bollywood. So if I ask, let's say, 5 or 10 out of, if I ask 10 people what their favorite music or song would be, I would get most of them saying a Bollywood music. A music that was played in a Hindi movie as their favorite song in, mm-hmm, Nepal. And that sort of means that almost every Nepalese, at least who has access to media, TV, internet, and all that, know Hindi right away.
But also that I would assume also comes from the cultural background between Nepal and India, right?
Yes and no. I would be delighted to say yeah, because of we have similar cultures and all that. Not so true. But because Nepal was never, we never grew in terms of creating media and creating movies. Bollywood was always there, even before. Mm-hmm. Of course, there is a relationship between Nepal and India where, because we were a Hindu nation and India was also a Hindu nation before, there was a certain relationship between that. But after a while, we figured, like, in Nepal, if we want to make good music in Nepali, our musicians would travel to India, record music there, and then come back because we didn't have technology. So we were, in a way, always lagging behind in terms of creating content, which means that mm-hmm. because it's so close to us, the borders are open. By the way, Nepal and India borders are open. I could just go to India without having passport or something. I could just enter India. The same for Indians mm-hmm. in Nepal. Yeah. So which means that the flow of people and flow of media was just so easy. And because India has the finances and the people and also, like, for example, the research and everything, the technology and all the infrastructure, we just consume their media. And it has become almost a staple mm-hmm. diet of Nepalese to watch, read, listen to Indian media. And TV, we would see Indian advertisements. Now, recently, Nepal banned a lot of Indian advertisements to be shown in Nepali TVs. And there was a whole mm-hmm. conversation about this, there was a big discussion around it, whether it was good for Indian channels to show their advertisement in Nepal. But in its logic, yeah, we have big influence of Hindi language and the Hindi music in Nepal.
Actually, I have a question. So there is this chess grandmaster called Anand. He's Indian, and his influence in India was so big that a lot of kids right now in India are starting to play chess and are already at the age of 8-9 international masters. Does that influence also Nepal?
I don't think so. As in, I don't know if I can answer this correctly without being stereotypical about the country of what I know is what Nepal is. But I don't think so. It has mm-hmm. seeped in Nepal as much as it has seeped India. Also, again, I think I would repeat Anya's statement here. Like, similar to how Italy is not one country, I would say. It is a lot of cultures put together into a border, right? Same with India. I wouldn't even dare to say the North India and South India is India, because it's, even though it's India, there is such a vast difference.
Yes, so, it has a lot.
So it could be, in the south, southern India, there could be certain influence of this person who is a chess master trying to influence the whole country to do it. I would say there's something completely different happening in the north and something happening in the east and the west. It's mm-hmm. it's a beautiful mess, India. And which means that
and now in Europe, thanks to Netflix and Queen of Gambit, everyone is playing chess as well. So
yeah, there you go. that too. So yeah, but that's a good question. But I don't know. First thing, and if I did, if my information about my country is enough, no, the influence hasn't come in Nepal. But it's interesting to know about it. And I don't.
How come, Gonzalo?
No, I just...
The Portuguese now living in Bolzano, learning Italian. You used to learn Bulgarian. You make a Globers podcast in English. And meanwhile, you're mentioning the Indian chess player.
That's that, right?
That's awesome.
Because he was one of the best players in the world.
Yeah.
Number one, number two. And I always liked chess since I was a kid. I learned it with my family. To this day, I still have a book called Introduction to Chess. Just the basic moves, how to move the pawn, how to move the knight, the queen, etc.
Did you enjoy the Queen of Gambit?
Yes, I did enjoy it a lot. It was a very well produced. the series. Yes, it's based on the book, so yeah, it's very, very good. I
As
should
in,
read the book actually.
have you read the book, Anya? And Gonzalo, no, you haven't. As in, you
No,
want to
no,
read
no,
it? No. As an interesting
no.
thing,
Oh,
you
yeah, but
said.
I enjoy
Interesting
the
thing you said,
series.
Anya, about how Gonzalo is built up of so many things in terms of language. There is an interesting anecdote that I have. I met this French guy in Nepal who knows around. He's a polyglot, so he speaks more than 10 languages. And he was learning Nepali, and he was like, "I haven't had a conversation in English for so long." A French guy not having a conversation in English for so long in Nepal that he knows two languages of Nepali. I know Nepali. That is it. There is so many languages in Nepal. So why I wanted to bring this up was like he's trying to research. He's doing a PhD in Nepal in Nepali language. And what is his PhD is a really interesting one. I loved it because he was trying to find out in which way does a foreign language such as English enter into a Nepali linguistics. So for example, if I'm speaking, let's say if I'm speaking Nepali, what we're figuring out that a word like obviously, actually, in a way, just so you know, by the way, all of these phrases are somehow entering into Nepali language, and it feels like people feel more comfortable using English words rather than a Nepali word to express themselves. And we had this discussion how this might be the multiple language into a singular language might be the way we should look at languages in future. And I was genuinely interested, and I read his 14 pages summary of what his PhD is about. And he is doing a really good research in figuring out, okay, in which order do people add English? And he was, you know, and I was like, how can you use it? It sounds an amazingly interesting thing. And one of the uses is, and I'm sure there are so many, was that when you Google Translate only uses one language and translates the other language, right? At the moment, I think it cannot, any translators cannot translate two languages at the same time to make it into a new form, you know, like new language. And he was like, it could help algorithms such as this to make the language that is so close to how people speak and not a colloquial, not a formal language of how it should, you know, the words should. And I was in a side of being a purist. I was like, I think when you speak Nepali, you should only speak Nepali. And when you speak English, you should only speak English. You know, like I'm this side of purist where I think that should be the way. But while talking to this anthropologist, he was the linguistic anthropology. And I was like, he was just trying to show me saying, you might want it this way, but things are moving differently. And we have to look at it. And we also have to like, you know, observe it. And really interesting. And so it comes so close to globalization, global citizenship, and also like linguistics and influences of different cultures, and also how are we dealing with this?
I think it's psychologically speaking, is easy to is easier to express feelings using not your mother tongue. For example, to when you are feeling something, instead of saying me saying it in Portuguese,
Interesting.
it's easier for me to say it in English. That way is a bit detached from
I
me.
think it depends what Sagar was saying. Also from the point of view of social linguistics, is that language in a way is a reflection of the reality we are living in. So it might be a pretty much normal situation that now the languages are changing and there are more English into it, and then English is being integrated quite naturally in some of the languages. So you would like, even if you, for instance, in Russian, we have also lots of words in English that we would use because there have, sorry, I was distracted to Sagar's message. Because there are no equivalents yet made in Russian language. So we would use still the English ones. And to me, it's a very interesting, like, it's the way how the global citizenship, again, coming back to global citizenship and globalization itself, it is mirroring in languages that we are speaking.
Well, I think it's time to end the podcast. Thank you everyone for listening. The next episode is going to be featuring both Mike and Leo. Both live in Belgium. One of them is working in the Red Cross, and we are going to talk a bit more about that. Thank you everyone. Please follow us in our social media,
Bye-bye.
both Facebook and Instagram. Bye.